guys, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome. And for those of you who are repeat offenders, welcome back to the Conscious Basket Show. My name is Samantha McCord and I am the founder and CEO of Conscious Basket. And on the show, we are going to be interviewing extraordinary people just trying to make a difference in this world and giving you tips on how you can too. So as always, if you like what we do, please subscribe, download a couple episodes, and leave a comment below. I will read them all. But for now, let's just dive right in.
We have to empower people, and people have to understand why it's so important to protect the nature, and everything is connected to everything. And for that matter, I really started to believe I do want to make a change in this world. I do want to help and contribute to the livelihoods of people. And I really believe doing that via fair trade is an amazing thing to do.
Today, we welcome Bo Corneliuson, the founder and CEO of Trips to Fair Trade Project Kenya and Augusta Naturals. She's worked in the fair trade industry for over 10 years and believes that ethical trading is essential in order to build sustainable value chains. She creates opportunities for brands and manufacturers to source fair trade organic products and guides trips to Kenya just to show how impactful these fair trade projects are. In this episode, we go over fair trade, women empowerment, period poverty, how you can contribute to the livelihood of people in developing countries, and just how bright and vibrant Kenya is. Let's dive right in. Hey guys, welcome back to the Conscious Basket Show. My name is Samantha McCord and I am the founder and CEO of Conscious Basket. And today we have the immense pleasure of welcoming Bo Corneliuson. She is the founder and CEO of Trips to Fair Trade Project Kenya. Welcome to the show, Bo.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Samantha.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. Everyone listening, like, get ready for a jam-packed show about things that you never thought you would need to know, but you definitely need to know. But let's start off really quick. But what do you have going on behind you? I see lots of really fun African vibes.
Yeah, that's true. I really like to have colorful stuff in my house that remind me of Kenya and Africa in general. And I have some products here that are made and produced in Kenya by fair trade producers. These are wooden birds made by a project. This is some Kisii stone from the Kisii region in Kenya. And I'm a real big fan of giraffes, as you can tell. So I also have some giraffes. And I think it's out of the screen, but this one is a basket done by the basket weavers in Kenya.
That so,
yeah, just to have an idea of the different projects that I've visited and that I bring my guests along on the trip.
Oh, that's beautiful. And everything looks so unique. It's so different.
Definitely. They're all handmade, so every piece is unique.
You know, that actually tees me up perfectly for my first question, Bo. I feel a little, you know, ignorant, but it's hard for me to really understand, like, really what fair trade is. I don't know if any of the other listeners feel that way, but can you explain, like, really what is fair trade?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people believe that it's about a fair wage, and that's like the main cause. Obviously, it's very important that workers are getting a good wage, a good enough wage in order to develop themselves, which means, for example, being able to pay for school fees so the children can go to school. But apart from that, it's also about transparency. It's about women empowerment. And also the environment is a very important factor when it comes to having a fair trade project.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that the other pieces of fair trade that we were talking a little bit about it is the voting rights. That's something I actually didn't know anything about. I thought the wages that were paid a little bit extra just went directly to the farmer, but that's not really the case, is it?
Yeah, that's correct. Like, oftentimes the farmers are in a cooperative, like with sometimes even tens of thousands of farmers in a whole region, like a big province, and they get together. And in that way, they can really unify and they can be a lot stronger, because one farmer alone can't really reach the world market when it comes to coffee or tea. So in that way, the whole corporation can ask for a fair trade price from the buyer at the auction. And these monies all combined can really do projects for the whole community. So in that way, the workers can decide for themselves. Do we want more teachers? Do we want to build a little health clinic? Or is it important that we improve on our farming skills and maybe invest in in new techniques. So irrigation, for example, which is very important nowadays when it comes to climate change.
Yes. And so the trickle effect really of the fair trade is most everybody together trying their best to make the community more impactful, right? So like you said, irrigation, we're building schools, maybe health clinics. I think that that's something that I feel is a misconception about fair trade. Do you feel like there's anything else that people don't realize or don't understand about fair trade?
It's also what has been annoying to me is that I find out that a lot of projects who are fair trade certified, especially when it comes to food, like coffee, tea, or like spices, they don't always find a fair trade buyer. So a lot of projects are fair trade certified. They do completely live up to all these standards, but at the end of the day, they don't find a buyer who's willing to pay the premium, and therefore fair trade certified goods end up in the conventional market.
So you're telling me that these people follow all of these regulations, they spend much more time and they're much more meticulous and intentional, but they end up getting wages for the coffee or tea or whatever it might be that would stack up to somebody who didn't follow those regulations?
Exactly. Yeah, that is true. Yeah. So in that way, you could end up with fair trade coffee who never received a fair trade prize, but who is still without child labor, who is still where they still were producing it, having a focus on the environment, where the workers are in a union, are allowed to be in a union, and so on. And I really feel we have to somehow do something about it. So these projects will all be able to sell their products with a fair trade premium.
Yeah, it feels a little counterintuitive for these people that are just trying to make their lives better. And, you know, that brings me to my next question, actually, because I was thinking fair trade, you could find anybody who's paying fair wages, because I also thought that in the very beginning before you and I had our conversation. But fair trade is really, you know, found in many places in the world, and there's certain criteria for fair trade. So where is it that we can actually expect these fair trade goods to come from, and why?
Generally, I think most developing countries have quite some projects. I must also say that there's a lot of good things happening in amazing projects which are not fair trade certified, because these projects decide not to go through with the whole process of getting the certification, because getting the certification is also very complicated and it's costly as well. So if you have a small project with just 10 or 20 workers, which might really change their lives, it might still not be very viable to truly get the certificate in place. But apart from that, I think most of the countries, it's just like in a developing world. So you must think of Mid and South America, Africa, and parts of Asia. I must say, like most developing countries, not everything is in place. The schooling is lacking, the healthcare is lacking. For that matter, these producers really need to get together, get into a corporation, and manage their needs and wants, basically. So in order for themselves to develop themselves in that region, because governments are not doing their share, basically, to really develop the country, develop the population, educate the people. So in that way, the people can help themselves. And I'm a true believer of trading instead of aiding. I do believe these people have have all the ability to develop themselves if only they are getting the chance to do so. And I believe fair trade is creating these opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's, you know, we were talking about how many people are actually impacted by fair trade, and you came up with a staggering number. It was like 1 million people or something like that. So, but from your experience, because you've been to these projects, you've been, you know, to the actual communities that are making these things, how many people are impacted?
Yeah, that's also the thing that we often only look at the direct numbers of workers that get a fair wage, but we forget that these people have families and they have people in the community that they take care of, and sometimes they're the only person in the surrounding that has a stable job. And fair trade is also about, let's say with coffee or with other products, like you have a harvesting season, and there's kind of a a time where there is a payment, but fair trade is about steadiness. Like every month there will be a wage. There's some kind of stability in that. And that is rarely to be found in developing countries. And these people are so important to their communities because not just their own children, but also the kids of their brothers and sisters or just the neighbors or whoever, like the families are so big and everybody considers each other to be, every relative is also considered to be really close family. The family ties are so much closer there oftentimes. So people look after each other. So a fair wage really goes a very long way in these communities.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not even just the fair wage with the family members, but you gave me a really good example when we spoke before about India and the trickle effect with the farmers and then the garment workers and how that all moves together. That was such a beautiful example of how this all works. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so what happens is that a lot of these projects really try to empower their workers. Especially, I'm always very inspired by the women's groups because these women really want to improve their own lives and especially, of course, the lives of their children. They're very, very focused on getting their children to a university, getting them to have a degree, to become at least nurses or sometimes doctors. And it's very inspiring to see because oftentimes these women themselves they are not as good at reading or they didn't have their own education, but they're really, really determined to make a better life for their children. And these projects, they really teach a woman a job. They teach her to do sewing or to make jewelry or to do pottery. And as they grow in the projects for a few years, oftentimes they're also stimulated to actually start their own business aside from the project. And not all of them are as entrepreneurial, but the ones that are oftentimes get also some microcredit so they can buy their own sewing machine or they can buy their own materials just for a few hundred dollars. They can make their own start and in that way really become independent. And many of these women in a year or two might hire a few more women. And even though these ladies will never be fair trade certified themselves and they will never reach the world market, but they have become important members in their local society to do the sewing jobs, to do embroidery or to do pottery or whichever job it is. But they are making their own living and they are creating job opportunities for the people around them in their local community.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's a huge connection. You even mentioned it before between women empowerment and fair trade. How many women are actually in these projects versus men? And how many have managerial roles?
Yeah, so what we see, according to WFTO, which is the World Fair Trade Organization, which in fact was started in the Netherlands. So I'm a little proud of that since I'm Dutch.
Oh, yeah.
And we see that almost three quarters of workers are women in these projects. So that means a lot of women empowerment already happening. And the senior roles are more than 50% of the time also held by women. So that is, I think, completely different from the corporate world that we're seeing nowadays.
Yeah. And, I'm not trying to have like a male hate conversation at all. So guys out there, please
don't
get your panties in a bunch. But there has been some direct correlation between women getting their own money and having, kids and how that impacts really everything down the family line. And you were talking to me a little bit about the education, family planning, and I think that that's just really inspiring to hear. Can you explain a little bit about what these women are doing with the money they're making?
Yeah, definitely. So what we're seeing is that when women are empowered, real big change is happening very, very soon. Because once women understand how their body works, how their cycle works, and once they have their own means in order to protect themselves from diseases and from pregnancies, from unwanted pregnancies, and once they no longer are relying on a man for her food, for her shelter, for her safety, she really now gets to choose who she's going to be with and if she's ready for a child or not. And she can also protect herself against diseases like HIV. So these things are really, really tremendous. And we see great changes happening when these women have the opportunity to take care of themselves in that way.
Yeah. And you know, we have seen trends right now in Africa of women with a very high birth rate, right? 5 to 6 kids per woman in Africa. And you were mentioning to me that through some of this education, it actually is impacting the mother, where her education is higher. So she understands a little bit more. But let's say nothing changes and these women are basically left without being educated. They don't understand their bodies. What do you think would be the impact of them not having these opportunities and how that impacts everybody down the line?
Yeah. I think it's just poverty will just continue to exist. And breaking the cycle, it's not that hard, but it's a challenge still. And I do believe education and especially women empowerment have a very big effect on these kind of things. We all know that in the Western world, we see that the higher educated women are and the higher educated the nation is going to become, we see a lower birth rate. And especially when the birth rate is 5 or 6 children, of course, it's very welcome for those women to only have 2 or 3, including a higher income. So now she's not just having less children, but she also has more money to spend. So at the end of the day, obviously, these children are going to have a way brighter future.
Yeah,
I think that is actually, that truly will break the cycle of poverty. That's what I believe.
Oh, that's beautiful. And, you know, I love that things are, you know, being focused on women's rights and, you know, giving everybody an opportunity. But I'm curious from your perspective, we were talking about, you know, what if women were ignored in the fair trade process, but what if fair trade was ignored altogether? What do you think would be the impact?
Well, we have to understand that whichever we are buying, we're voting with our money. And anything that you buy is produced. So even if it's produced in a factory and the person was working very long hours and 6 or 7 days a week and so on, it's still creating a job. But it's probably not creating a job that you would want to contribute to, because it might be modern slavery, or it might not be produced in a very healthy way. Maybe toxins were used in the process of producing these products. And when buying fair trade, you truly vote for what I hope you believe in, which is like a brighter world, a better tomorrow, a future for the makers, and a fair compensation for their work and appreciation for their skills. Because oftentimes these products are true arts, and you can't learn them in just a word like a 10 lessons thing. It's really a skill that is going from generation to generation. And when buying fair trade, you truly contribute to the livelihoods of these communities and you give them the opportunity to be able to develop themselves. Yeah, I just got very inspired. I saw all these beautiful products in the procurement center, which were from all over the world, and they were all handcrafted and gorgeous and unique and colorful. And I thought to myself, people should know that these products exist and these projects, and I want to tell the story, and I want people to know that they can change the world, like one purchase at a time, one gift at a time, one celebration at a time. And how much more beautiful is it that you would give somebody a gift for their wedding or for their anniversary or for their birthday, and it has a beautiful story of women in the rural parts of Kenya being empowered with the work that they're doing. So I think it's just, it's an amazing thing to do, and it's really lovely to be there and to see the impact of fair trade firsthand.
It is beautiful, and I just want to now transition into trips to Fair Trade Project Kenya, because okay. You know, you had this you know, inspiration as a young woman. You saw these beautiful pieces, and then you got the idea from a woman who used to do the trips to then take over and show physically people these projects. So tell me a little bit about how you created the company and why it's so important to you.
Yeah, so basically, I did a thesis for a fair trade importer in the Netherlands. I did a market research for her to see how to improve on the sales on the German market. And she, from time to time, like maybe every two or three years, created a trip to Kenya for people to join and to see the projects. But she felt that it was taking a lot of time. She was getting a bit older, and she just felt like, hey, maybe it's really something for you. And since I was in Kenya myself for over 6 months, I thought of the idea and I thought, yeah, that could actually be cool. I didn't immediately start it yet with my company. I still got on a career job and worked some more, then traveled even more to Asia this time. But it was always in the back of my mind, like, yeah, I should do these trips. And yes, I do want to see these projects myself. And I cannot be the only person who would want to see and meet these people and see their craftsmanship. So in that regard, I just... finally did start the trip project program, and I did start planning the tour and create this holiday, which is educational, informative, and inspiring, I hope and I believe. Yeah,
that is, I mean, it's just so unique to me. I mean, you know, the Dutch people, my goodness, like how open and free and, you know, beautiful group of people you guys are. And to think to yourself as a young woman, okay, I'm going to go travel to all these projects around the world, go to Asia, India, Africa, all over, but you ended up settling on Kenya. Your heart seems to always go back there. Why?
Yeah, it's just like I was there for 6 months in 2015. I really had a great time. I got hundreds of contacts literally already then. I was very, very social in that time. And I just felt at home. And Nairobi is really like incredibly big and amazing city. There's a lot of people living there. Nairobi is also like really the East Africa hub for a lot of big organizations. So if you like, the headquarters of different big aid organizations are there. So you would see a lot of expats, a lot of international people. So I really felt very much at home over there. And just Africa. I mean, I've been there for the first time when I was only 7 years old. I was South Africa at that time. But I guess I just... What I would say, I caught the Africa virus. So it's just like, it's so amazing. It's so colorful. It's so different. I do feel the roots of humanity are there. And yeah, it's an amazing vibe. And I think everybody should definitely see an African country, but any African country will do. But I think for the wildlife, Kenya is also in the top three for sure. It's gorgeous there when you want to go see the elephants, giraffes, and so on. And it's a very interesting country. It's a huge country. You have coast, there is desert, there is lakes, there is rainforest. Yeah, it's just something you have to experience. I cannot fully explain. It's a feeling.
Yeah, it sounds super adventurous. It sounds like completely another world. So what types of people do you take on such an adventurous trip?
The trip is really open for anyone. Of course, whoever is interested in fair trade and whoever really wants to meet the local people. We are going to areas where normally the tourists don't go. So we're really in rural areas. And also at certain projects where the people are so excited to meet us because they hardly ever are visited, especially not by tourists. So it's very unique and special for them as well, which makes it extra fun for us, of course, too. My future vision for my company is to really bring along like professionals who are in the procurement department of bigger retail chains. Yeah. So in that regard, they can really design together with the project a certain range of articles, of products, and in that way have a bigger order, a few thousand of this, a few thousand of that. And in that way, I really want to improve and increase on the impact that I'm having with this tour.
Okay. And I looked at the list of projects that you guys do visit. There's some really fun ones, but I wanted to highlight some of your favorites. And I wanted to pick two because one is really impactful and one's really fun. But I'll start with the Karunga Women's Group.
Oh, yes.
That one really struck a chord with me because I didn't realize that there was an issue with period poverty. I actually didn't even know what that was before you and I talked first. So tell me a little bit about this group, what period poverty is, and this wash campaign that they've got going on.
Yeah, so the Karunga Women Group is definitely one of my favorites. It's a very unique visit to their space and their place. These are women that have been empowering themselves for over 10 years now, and they started with just seeds and gardening and improving their nutrition, which they could harvest from their own little lands. And then they started with buying a plot of land and building like a workshop on it. And now they're weaving fabrics and they're sewing as well. And these women have been trained and educated by Days for Girls to make washable sanitary pads. And basically all these women, by their own experience, already have experienced period poverty, meaning they could not always go to school or go to work or even go outside during their period because they could not afford pads. And it's still a very big issue today in Kenya that the majority of women is are girls, of young girls, are missing school multiple times a year because they lack money for pads. And of course, they can't go to school without pads. And these women are now making these sets. They are washable sanitary pads, and they also give the girls education. So once they go and distribute these sets, they always make at least 30 or 50 sets, so they can immediately distribute it to a full group of girls. And they also explain to the girls, like, how does our body change? What is puberty? How does our cycle work with the ovulation, that menstruation is just a sign of fertility, that it's nothing to be ashamed of, that it's natural and it's normal. And they also are being explained how to use the set, how to wash it and clean it. And in that way, the girls, for 3 years at least, can go to school without having to worry about buying sanitary pads. And at the same time, it only needs to be distributed once and not every month or every quarter. Mm-hmm. And it cannot clog the sewage. There is a very bad sewage system in Kenya. It's almost non-existing. All the pads that do get into the environment, of course, is also like an environmental problem. As well. So they do end up in landfills, but they also end up in the ocean or in lakes, which is a problem for the nature and for animals. It works in many ways. It works for the girls to be in school, and it works for the environment at the same time. And it creates jobs for these women that are making these sets.
What happens to these women that don't have access to these sanitary pads?
Yeah, so what is happening, especially to the younger girls, they might every month like miss 3 to 5 days of school, which means they're getting behind at school, which means also that parents will start, or guardians will start to believe, hey, you know what, your school results are not that good. Why don't you just start working in the field instead? So they might completely not get an education to be able to do a job like being a nurse or being a hairdresser or whichever, or even becoming a doctor. Some of those women are very bright, but they just don't have access to pads. That means they don't have access to 20 or 25% of their education every month again.
Yeah.
Which also happens in Kenya is that there is this mentality that if you need something, you need to have a man to offer that to you. A lot of times money is just circulating way more between men than between women. So they're kind of stimulated from time to time to get boyfriends to help them out. So these guys might help them out a few times, but unfortunately we see that sometimes these girls do end up paying with risking their lives, getting HIV or becoming pregnant. And this is a really big problem in Kenya.
Yeah, that breaks my heart, honestly, to think that, you know, even with the women that, you know, aren't able, they're not able to go to school, they're having to sell their bodies just to have basic human needs met. It's just such a big thing. That's such a big issue that I feel like for me personally, I didn't know. And it really does break my heart. And I'm so happy that there's something out there for these girls to be able to go to school and do the things that they need to do to propel their lives into a better place. So one, thank you for, you know, supporting these women and for sharing that story. But I wouldn't say more fun, because it's we have a balance here, but the other group that I wanted to highlight are the basket weaving group. I'm so bad at the Kithoni women group, right? Is that good?
Kithoni. Yeah, Kithoni. Yeah.
Because those are the basket weaving group that you told me that they were really excited when you guys come out. Because they're in the middle of literally nowhere, right?
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah. That's really like one of those moments which always gives me goosebumps when I'm there. And even now talking about it, I can just feel it in my body. Yeah, that is definitely one of the highlights of the tour. We are exactly, as you said, in the middle of nowhere. It's just a gorgeous surrounding. The scenery is really, really beautiful. And we don't even know where we're at. Luckily, we have one of these people with us from the cooperation because they know where to find them. And then just, they're just sitting there. But when we arrive, they all stand up, they all start clapping and they all start singing and they all wear their matching dresses because they're weaving that day and they're having visitors and they're so excited to meet us. And yeah, that is definitely so much fun to see. And so much, yeah, just a really, really the most African experience, I would say, when it comes to meeting locals. And also, I believe the baskets are gorgeous as well. So it's just a really nice place to go to, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, those are only two places or two of the projects you guys visit. I mean, we've got wood carvers, coffee farmers. We have glass recycling, rose nurseries, jewelry, textiles, Kisi stone, which is a beautiful way to have art. I mean, you have the ocean sole where they wash the flip-flops. I mean, guys, there's like, I don't even know how many projects you go visit, but it's so educational, so inspirational. And it's not just all education with Bo. She does have a little bit of fun. You guys have an adventure day.
Definitely.
I want to talk about the public transport that you told me about. That's like basically a club.
Yeah, totally. I think the thing that just stunned me the most in Nairobi itself was just the public transport, which basically it's more like run by corporations itself. It's not really government owned. And in that way, they can just do whatever they want to do on these buses. They're called matatu. And it's just they have these incredible sound systems installed in them. And they have all these art and paintbrushing of Beyonce, Lady Gaga, and Notorious B.I.G., Tupac, and Obama. They also do political leaders, Gaddafi. They're a fan of different political leaders and or Jesus as well. They also put things of religion on it. And they just go highest speed ever. And the loudest ever music. It's louder than a discotheque. And I mean, to me, it was just like, I cannot believe this to be real. And it's so much fun. And I just happen to love it a lot. And obviously, we have our own driver and our own vehicle. It's very comfortable. It has air conditioning. It's very reliable, too. But we do go on one trip with that bus because I just think it's an experience. And I do want people to see that for themselves. It's a lot of fun. And then we also take a Bora Bora, which is like a motorcycle taxi.
Yeah, you guys take it to, I was looking at some of your YouTube videos. There's like this really intense bridge that I don't know that I would be able to actually get across.
It's quite scary. Even me, I'm afraid of heights. The first few times I had to go on it, it was just like, I always wanted to cry. I was living in this project for a while in 2015. So I had to cross it literally maybe more than 100 times. I could still panic. Like the last time I had to cross it, I did out of nowhere start to be super scared, but I did survive. If people don't want to do that, they can still take the motorcycle all around, and they could even still have our own driver take them to the project. But so far, everybody was daring to go. So
yeah, I mean, how many times do you have the opportunity to walk across a bridge that literally looks like you're in Tomb Raider, and like it's so intense and so beautiful too at the same time. It's just like
it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it sounds like you're giving a lot of opportunities for these people to get involved and like understand fair trade and really do their part. But let's say for the listeners out there that they're like, okay, this is my first like real rundown on fair trade. Because if it is your first time, I was completely blown away that there's so much, so many layers. But if you're a newbie fair trader, what can you do to get involved?
Oh, yeah, there's many ways to get involved, at least in the Netherlands. I don't know in other countries, but we in supermarkets already can find fair trade coffee, sugar, bananas, even coconut milk or spice mixes. So you could buy those, of course. You could also, when you have a celebration, a birthday or something, if you want to give somebody something, try to source it ethically and fair trade. In the Netherlands, it's made easy because we have Wereldwinkel, which means World Shop. In Germany, it's Weltladen. In France, they have Marchand du Monde. So there's many different places where they do have these kind of stores. And of course, online is a big resource as well to find fair trade gift items. Then you have a campaign called Fair Trade Towns. It might also run in your own country or even in your own region. So you might become a volunteer to promote these kind of things and to inspire the local restaurants, the local library, and local political organizations to source their coffee and tea fair trade, and to maybe also for the Christmas gifts for their staff to source that as well to be fair trade certified. In the Netherlands, you can become also a volunteer to these stores, to these shops, inspire others to buy fair trade as well. If you have a party yourself, ask people for fair trade wines or fair trade gifts. So people are also themselves like triggered and inspired to source something ethical. And they might find out that some of these products, they really like them and they want them for themselves. So in that way, I think we can all contribute to fair trade.
That is a really wonderful list for everybody to get involved. The Fair Trade Towns for the US listeners, that's something that you can get involved with. It's basically spreading the word in your area for companies to carry fair trade items, just making sure that maybe their coffee is fair trade, sugar, honey, chocolate, whatever it might be. There's lots of things that companies can also do to contribute. But Bo, one last question for you, since I've already taken a lot of your time. If you were to leave the listeners with one thing that they only took away one thing from this conversation, what would you want them to know?
I would want them to know that we all have a voice, we all have a vote, and we're voting with our money every day. And choosing fair trade truly contributes to the livelihoods of people in developing countries. And I think the most important thing is be conscious with how you spend your dollar or your euro or your pound or your yen or your Kenyan shilling, whichever currency it is. Make sure you spend it on something that you believe in and you contribute to the world you want to live in. And So I think that's a very important question. And of course, if you do want to travel and if you do dare to come to Kenya, join me on my tour.
Definitely go on this tour with Bo. It looks amazing. You guys can even check her out on YouTube. I'll put the links in the show notes. It was a pleasure having you on, Bo. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. And I'm really looking forward to all the work that you're going to do with Conscious Basket.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining us on another episode of Conscious Basket. And just a small reminder, Conscious Basket is not just hosting interviews. We are in the process of launching our marketplace, where our goal is to make it super easy for you to make conscious decisions about what you're buying by knowing the origin of the products and services. We're using our technology to highlight a transparent supply chain with our vendors, which means you know what goes into those products and where they came from to make sure those things you buy don't weigh on your conscience. And to ensure this peace of mind, we have developed a score to rank the sustainability of the purchase. For instance, how much water is being used, trees saved, animal lives, human rights, and so on. So if you're an entrepreneur with a sustainable product and would be interested in being on the platform, please email us at info@consciousbasket.com. Also, if you're an entrepreneur, thought leader, or academic that would like to be a guest on the show, please drop us a line at the same email. And if you're just interested in taking a closer look at us, you can also take a look at our website, which is www.consciousbasket.com. And as always, you can explore the topics we discussed in the show notes and find many more topics on all of our social platforms. So give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn @consciousbasket. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe to our show and leave us a comment with any key takeaways. I read them all. Share with your friends, family, post a screenshot on your social about the podcast so that we can extend our reach to help propel our movement forward. Finally, just another small reminder that perfectionism is not the goal here. In my opinion, perfectionism is what gets in the way of all of us collectively picking what I like to call your thing, which is whatever you choose to make a positive impact on this world. Thank you again for joining us.